The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. Last night we saw the largest Tory rebellion that Boris Johnson has faced since he won that majority of 80. James, can you crunch the numbers for us? When it came to the new tier system, it passed quite comfortably, but ultimately on rebellions, it didn't look too good for the Prime Minister, did it?
Yeah, so there were 53 Tory rebels who actively voted against number two tellers. So that's 55 full-on rebels. I mean, the worry for Boris Johnson will be that these COVID rebellions keep getting bigger. You know, the first Emergency Powers Act vote back in March passed without a vote. Then in September, 7 Tory MPs voted against the restrictions. Then 42 voted against the 10 p.m. curfew in October, 53 last night. And it is going up. I mean, it's reasonable to assume that when Parliament votes on this towards the end of January, the same dynamic will repeat itself. But I think that, you know, you had an example of Boris Johnson being a lucky general in that I think we were all getting set for kind of days of analysis of this Tory rebellion and what it meant. And then the news dropped this morning that the Pfizer vaccine has been approved by the regulator for use here in the UK and people will start being injected from next week. Now, this is not only something that moves the story on, but it also is a reminder that these vaccines kind of do offer a way out of this crisis. And I think a few months ago, it looked like Boris Johnson's government could be broken on the wheel of lockdown. This constant cycle of coming in and out was just going to end up destroying his administration. I think it is now clear how this country gets out of this crisis and how politics returns to something approaching normality.
Isabel, do you think the news of the Pfizer vaccine is going to transform the mood in the Tory backbenches? We've heard previously about the fact that vaccine trials in terms of Pfizer, Moderna, Oxford looking promising. But the fact that we are now expecting to see, you know, needles and arms, one way of putting it, you know, within a week, do you think that will start to lend a degree of credibility to Boris Johnson's promise of, you know, sunnier uplands?
No, I don't think so. And I think the Prime Minister underlined that himself today, actually at PMQs. He was giving quite sober and cautious answers to Sir Keir Starmer on the rollout of the vaccination programme, particularly in care homes. And he said that he didn't want people to get too overexcited about the speed at which this vaccine could be rolled out. And that's just a reminder that though the vaccine, one vaccine has been approved, you know, we're going to have vaccines being put into people's arms. And I love the way he keeps talking about things being shoved into people's arms as though, you know, Brits aren't scared of needles or anything like that. But needles will be going into arms from next week onwards. They won't be going into everyone's arm next week. And we will have months of this programme going on. And this is what Tory MPs are agitated about. They accept that at some point next year, there won't be a need for the restrictions. But what they're worried about is what happens between now and then about the businesses that will go to the wall. A lot of them are talking a lot about constituents' mental health. And they just don't believe Boris Johnson when he says the sunny uplands around the corner. They are thinking, well, you know, could it be next autumn when we start to see an end of the restrictions? They're very agitated about the prospect of another lockdown in January, and they don't really believe any reassurances that that won't be happening. And they also expect to get something meaningful around the 16th of December, which is the time when the review of the current tier allocations takes place. I think they're expecting a more localised approach then, and they're definitely expecting to see a good number of areas moving down tiers. If that doesn't happen, then we'll see the rage all over again. A lot of them saw last night's vote as a way of telling ministers where things need to go and doing their colleagues who didn't rebel a favour by suggesting that, as I said, that the areas do need to move down tiers. If that doesn't happen, then I think things are going to become even trickier for Boris Johnson. So as much as he talks about the vaccine, that's kind of irrelevant in a very strange way.
James, when it comes to Boris Johnson trying to show MPs there is a light at the end of the tunnel, you had the Zoom call yesterday where Boris Johnson addressed MPs and before the vote, and his message was, there were two in a way. One was ultimately saying that actually, you know, it is dangerous to have a disunited Tory party and you not give Labour the satisfaction of seeing one. So kind of going back to tribal party lines, but also he used the analogy, this is a 6-hour car journey. Everyone is asking when you're going to get there. I don't think I've ever been in a 6-hour car journey now I think about it.
I have an electric car, so I have.
Okay, there you go. For those who have that experience, perhaps they can relate. But ultimately, you need patience because you will get there in the end. But do you think when it comes to trying to show MPs that the 6-hour car journey could come to an end quite soon, maybe in an hour, maybe in 2 hours, it's quite important that we now see other vaccines get approved? Or do you think that's a little bit irrelevant?
Yeah, look, I think we're going to extend the metaphor. The problem is that Boris Johnson has repeatedly told the people in the back of a car complaining that they're about to get there very soon, just hang on a minute and we'll be there. And then it turned out there's several hundred miles of a journey still to go.
Very like an electric car, actually. No, it keeps running out of battery.
The Pfizer vaccine being approved, obviously, is good news. Obviously, will enable a certain number of care home residents and healthcare staff to be vaccinated. The UK doesn't have enough Pfizer vaccine to vaccinate the whole population. That the really key for the UK, and not just because it was developed here, but is the Oxford vaccine, because the UK has enough Oxford vaccine on order to vaccinate the entire population, which makes things much simpler. Because if you were in a situation which was the original Kate Bingham floated plan, which was you'd only vaccinate half the population, there would be a long debate about, oh, what restrictions should stay in place. If you can vaccinate the whole, as much as the adult population wants it, then you get into a very simple thing where you can just get rid of all the restrictions. But you would need that Oxford vaccine to be approved. I think there's kind of broad confidence that that is likely to happen. But that is the game changer for the UK in terms of getting out of this stuff. I think actually that the potentially prophetic words in last night's debate were from Damian Green, which is undoubtedly, I completely think Isabel is right, but there'll be huge pressure from Tory MPs for an easing up on the 16th of December. But I also think that Sage will be very wary about easing before Christmas, given that 5 days of three households mixing and the like. And I think the Damian Green point is true here, which is, he said last night, you know, that is this strictness all because of Christmas? Are we all going to look back and regret this? Are we not going to find that much easing to be possible in January because of this Christmas loosening that is coming up? I think this is the tricky thing, which is, I think Tory MPs will be hoping that the Tory rebellion will be bigger at the end of January if you're not seeing some substantial easing up or more localised system where West Kent is separated off from East Kent, North Somerset from Bristol, all of these kind of things. But that will be harder to do if the virus is in an uptick at that point, with the post-Christmas restrictions, students going back to university and the like. I also think the other thing that is going to be a scratchy part of politics between now and Easter is, I think every time Boris Johnson says we have now vaccinated X percent of the population, Tory MPs will start saying, well, look, the most vulnerable people have been, the most acutely vulnerable people have been vaccinated, so let's lift the restrictions. This is going to run as a row between now and April, between, as someone close to Boris Johnson said to me earlier today, you know, we're never going to be able to move quick enough to avoid criticism from people for going too slowly.
Isabel, we know Tory MPs, or at least a sizable number or a sizable group of Tory MPs, are unhappy about the restrictions. But how do you think the news of the Pfizer vaccine, I suppose, changes the views of some in Cabinet? Because Matt Hancock, I think it's probably fair to say, has not been hugely popular amongst certain Tory MPs. You've seen Steve Baker and others in the past say, you know, how do we know we're going to get a vaccine? And of all the Cabinet ministers, it's been Matt Hancock who's been the most, you know, vocal to say that a vaccine is what we're going to have to wait for we get out of restrictions. Do you think the news that there is now an approved vaccine is going to boost Matt Hancock's standing, reduce talk that he might get moved from a health secretary?
I think it depends whether he's able to move the conversation on from the tears and onto the vaccine. I don't think that's possible at the moment because Tory MPs are still very upset, and they're upset about the way that he often communicates and the way that his colleagues in the health department communicate with them as well. They feel as though people are being unnecessarily scared. That's what they say health ministers are doing. And so there's a lot of work for Hancock to do. And again, there's a big challenge about the rollout of the vaccine into the wider country, but into care homes in particular. There are lots of challenges. That was something that Keir Starmer raised at Prime Minister's Questions today. Obviously, the temperature at which some of the vaccines have to be kept when they're being transported and stored is a big issue. And it was something that Boris Johnson did acknowledge in his answers. And so there's a lot of logistical issues for Matt Hancock to grapple with, which could raise or indeed lower his standing further with Conservative MPs.
James, when I suppose we're looking a little bit back to last night's vote and the size of the rebellion, it's clearly an uncomfortable place for any prime minister to have a Tory rebellion, which could in theory demolish their majority. It's something you write about in the magazine this week. Do you think this is a temporary problem because we are now seeing hopes in the form of a vaccine, coronavirus going away? Or do you think there are going to be lingering effects regardless from the past year, from the fact we have seen various mounting rebellions on areas not just relating to coronavirus?
So I think a lot depends on which timetable is right. If, as Isabel says, some Tory MPs worry about this goes on until next autumn, then I think the discontent will reach kind of properly dangerous levels. If you're in a situation, which I personally think is more likely, where you're seeing restrictions kind of ending in April, then I think it is sufficiently sui generis that you can basically begin to kind of move on and rebuild relations. It's not like when Theresa May tried to pass a Brexit deal with Labour votes, where it was going to be a kind of ongoing sore even once the deal had passed. What I would say, though, is this, is I think the nature of being an MP has changed in recent years. I recommend a good book written by Isabel on this subject. And I think particularly, you know, you think back to the kind of post-war years, you know, people, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's also true. People had served in the military. There was much more discipline. People voted the party line much more unquestioningly. I mean, MPs have now become more rebellious. There are more Tory MPs who perceive themselves as kind of local champions. Rather than being Tory MPs, they think of themselves first and foremost as the MP for their constituency. And I think MPs are more keen to have an individual profile than they did before. I remember speaking to someone who was in David Cameron's Whip's office, and he said, you know, the problems we had to deal with, which no one else had to deal with, some story would break in a newspaper on a front page at 10 o'clock at night, and we'd find that 15 Tory MPs had tweeted that they wouldn't be voting for this. While as, you know, back in the days before social media and the like, you know, you had time to take the mood, to assess stuff and kind of get across it. So I think there will be more rebellions in this part of the government because of this. I also think there's an element to which British politics has gone slightly Australian, right? Which is people remember that Boris Johnson voted against Theresa May's Brexit deal, but he himself was a rebel. And I mean, there are some people who say, well, look, you know, how can he tell me not to rebel when he rebelled against a previous leader? And so those appeals to unity that you were describing on that Zoom call, for some people who didn't back Boris Johnson for leadership, have a kind of slight feeling of, oh, come on, you did what you thought was, you know, right, rather than thinking of must follow the party line, so I'll do the same.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.